Well, hello everybody out there in Turdland. This is your pal Turd coming at you with another fabulous installment of the TFMR podcast. Today I want to go in a slightly different direction. It's a return visit of our pal Ned Naylor Leyland. And in the past, we've often spoken with Ned about kind of big picture issues, some of the internal and external dynamics affecting the metals markets. But many of you may not know that Ned's real job, his actual employment, is as a mining equity fund manager in the UK. His firm is Cheviot Asset Management, based in London, where he is an investment director. And so I thought it might be kind of fun in this time where we're all seeing the metals take off and the miners look in general to have bottomed. I thought it might be fun just to kind of pick Ned's brain in his actual stated area of expertise. So, Ned, welcome back to Turdville. How are you, my friend?
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson. I'm very well and pleased to be with you, and happy to be talking about a subject which seems to have split Turdville somewhat between the lovers and the haters, and I think it'll be fun, and we can dig into some of the things that we look at when we're looking at the equities.
Well, let's dive right in then, my friend. As you know, we've had some rather challenging period of years here in the miners. Some equate that, well, I mean, we can equate that to a number of different things, but I think a lot of folks just at the surface think that demand for the shares has shifted to demand for the ETFs, and in terms of investment dollars, there's just not that much to go around, and so the shares are languishing. How about yourself? Do you are you kind of in that same camp, or what are your thoughts as to why things have lagged for so long?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, if you're saying why they underperform bullion, I think there's a lot of reasons, a number of which will be well known to people listening to this. You know, we had a fall in 08-09, which was so bad that I think, frankly, that a lot of people have just got burnt and don't want to come back into the sector. I think that's an underappreciated element of the underperformance. I think there's no doubt that there's a laziness component too. Yeah, sure, generalist fund managers have looked and seen the opportunity to buy the gold and silver ETFs, which have been going up nicely in line with the gold and silver prices, and have felt that that's a way they can have exposure with minimal management and minimal hassle. So I think that's been part of it. I think there's definitely been some, in fact, I actually met with a company today and we were discussing the short position. I thought there's been a lot of shorting going on, and particularly that needs to be borne in mind relative to the free float of these companies, you know, the shares which aren't owned by insiders and sticky long-term fund managers. And generally the free float in gold and silver mining companies can often be quite small. And you know that accentuates the shorting. So I think, you know, there have been those reasons in terms of pricing, in terms of why people might have actively avoided mining companies. There's the other obvious stuff, which is the capital and operating cost inflation, you know, the input cost stuff, which clearly has really ground people down, Turd, over the last 18 months, certainly 12 to 18 months, mainly because, you know, people see that input cost inflation, but if the price of the underlying is going up well alongside it, then, you know, that's mitigated to a degree. But when the price is going down or sideways and the input costs are not, then, you know, it's led to a pretty brutal period for the gold and silver mining companies. But I don't necessarily see that as a reason to be terrified right now. I would sort of push one to consider it as an opportunity instead.
And you make an excellent point. You can certainly see where, with input costs going up and the price of the actual product going down for the last 12 months, that puts a bit of a squeeze on margins, doesn't it? And I guess there's some explanation as to why they've underperformed here for a while. As you look then, I guess I think of it as coming at this from a regular investor standpoint. If I were to think like a fund manager, let me ask you these then, I guess, specific questions. Do you prefer larger caps or smaller caps, or does it matter? And then if you can tie that into then, what are the most important factors, at least for you, when you evaluating a certain equity?
Well, I think whether one goes for small, mid, or large cap, and I would tend to say there are three subsectors. I advise a fund which owns all three. I think that whatever happens, owning one company as an individual investor is a pretty dangerous way to operate, unless one went for one of the royalty stream companies, and then of course the dynamics are a bit different. But look, what I don't particularly like at the moment, or we don't like as a team, are the big and uglies. We think they have inefficient scales. Their input cost problem is harder to control. There are more moving parts. They're spreading their eggs around their basket, which probably in the past people perceived to be a good thing. I think at the moment that's a bad thing. They've got problems replacing their reserves. They've got lower overall grades. You know, these big guys. There has been a bit of a change, in as much as Newmont said that they were going to start paying dividends and that will scale up as the gold price goes up, and this is good, but overall I think the mega cap part of the gold and silver mining space is populated with relatively inefficient companies that aren't going to probably do what the average gold and silver investor would look for. Having said that, your big generalist fund managers would probably always end up still in those due to their scale and their liquidity. Beyond that, in terms of mids and smalls, I think that small caps, their valuations are very low on a historical basis. I think that if you choose carefully, you can find some outstanding opportunities there. I think it's not an easy game. You need to have quite a high level of understanding in order to do it. That's something I've learned over 10 years of doing this. Particularly in the small cap end, management is everything, Ted. It really, really matters. You've got to make sure that the management have got a track record. They do know what they're doing. They're not running a lifestyle business and taking a big salary out, but, rather they're well incentivized. That they have a big stake or skin in the game, whatever you want to describe it as. And then that leaves you with the mid cap sector, which I would say at the moment probably the most interesting. There are some companies in the mid cap space which have an interesting growth profile, decent grade, and a possible M&A target. So I think that some of them don't have growth profile because they're not in production, in the mid cap space. But setting that aside, you want to have, in my opinion, decent grade, and I think there has to be that potential for a takeover as well. And you asked me to lead that into how I evaluate, and I would say that we're not rigid in our modelling. We have a very extensive modelling of around 120, 130 companies, but we're not married to any specific valuation metric. Historically, the price to NAV and enterprise value to reserve ounce, which is sort of a way of thinking of option value, have been historically ways over the last 10 years that people have looked at mining companies. I think that's pretty much gone for the time being. It may come back when everyone repopulates the sector. I think at the moment, price to cash flow, and that infers that one's looking at companies that are in production, I think is probably as good a way of analyzing companies across the board as you can get. And on the smaller side, I would reiterate again that cash balances and cash burn is just critical. Companies at the moment, while the prices still aren't in raging bull mode, you're really reliant on these companies having enough cash or having raised enough cash in the last 12 to 24 months that they can continue doing what they're doing without getting wobbled out. And I think staying in close contact with these companies and making sure you're aware of where their cash positions lie, and obviously, the fact they're debt-free, I think that's crucial.
Well, and Ned, you've obviously got experience at this, and you've all, as in your position, you've got great access to these companies, and you get to maybe visit them, or they might stop by and see you.
Yeah.
And anybody in the UK or in Europe, I would imagine, has access to you at Cheviot. But if you're a regular, or access to your management, if you're a regular Joe in the US or elsewhere in the world, and you just like to research and maybe pick up a few shares of this company or this, I mean, is there a public source of info that you can recommend for someone that would do their own research and be able to kind of drill down? No pun intended.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think, if I put myself in that position right now, what I would say is this: it does matter meeting companies. To try and suggest otherwise, it would be silly. One thing I notice amongst I have plenty of friends who like investing in the sector, don't necessarily even listen to what I do. They do their own thing. But what I tend to notice is when we end up talking about a company, which I meet on a regular basis, and they don't, the difference in knowledge sort of starts to manifest. But what I would say is that don't be reluctant to pick up the telephone. You know, get yourself a list of questions you want answered. Go about it in a gentle way, so don't be too abrasive with companies, because of course their time is valuable to them too. But generally you can get in touch with companies and ask to have your questions answered, and more or less most of the time they will do that. I mean, there's the obvious stuff, which is most company, and frankly, if a company doesn't have a good website with all the data you would need on it, then I would be worried and nervous as to why that was anyway. But you've got CEDAR, which obviously people can go on to research things in more detail. MindSight's not a bad place to look for individual company news. And as and when you can, there are conferences where these companies go en masse, and you can meet, I don't know, 10 or 20 of them. Sure. In one place, and eyeball management and ask some specific questions. But I would sort of go back to what I said earlier, which is, you know, for the average person investing in the sector, generally a few smaller investments rather than one concentrated one would be something I would suggest, because, you know, individual risk with mining companies is high, whether it's mining risk, geopolitical risk, or any other kind of risk. You know, there are, these things aren't straightforward, and hence why, you know, for my clients that I want to invest in mining companies, effectively set this fund up in order for them to have access to a basket of mining companies rather than individual ones.
That is always smart, but particularly in something like miners, that's for sure, Ned. Hey, I want to go off in a different direction for a second.
Sure.
We have I'd call him our resident expert in Turdville regarding the miners. The guy does some great work all on his own, crafts his own reports, and he goes by the name SRS Rocco. And I thought, in preparation for this podcast, hell, I might as well ask SRS Rocco if he's got some questions for you, because he's probably going to come up with better questions than I would. So let me rattle off a couple of questions from him and get your thoughts.
Yep.
He asked first if you had read a presentation given by the CEO of Goldfields that was, I guess, entitled "What Do Investors Want from a Gold Mining Stock?" He wanted to know, one, if you'd seen that and what you thought about it. And because I guess the CEO, his name is Nick Holland, came down pretty hard on those big mining companies that you said maybe you're not too very fond of in the first place. Mm. Have you seen that, or is it just kind of dovetail? I guess the idea of it kind of dovetails into what you just said about some of the bigger stocks.
Well, it does to a degree, yes. You know, if he's being brutal about his own mega cap sector, then that would agree with me. Unfortunately, I have to say I haven't read that presentation. He's the CEO of Goldfields, which is a South African-based company, and I don't invest in Africa. The reason I do that is I just think that narrowing one's horizon and trying to mitigate political risk is a good idea. So it's one of the things, we don't invest in Central Asia, Russia, or Africa. It's just a way of reducing the portfolio horizon. But look, you know, no one could argue to the contrary that they've done a very bad job for the last 5 to 6 years. I'm not sure all of it's their fault. I think the nature of the industry and these big companies, kind of what I was saying before, is all the different moving parts and the different assets all around the world was probably a good thing before. And that's caused, you know, big problems since. I will have a look at the presentation in due course, because I think it sounds interesting, and you know, it's important to try and read as much as one can. And SRS Rocco's always got some interesting stuff, which I spot on your site, and I think his basic pitch about diesel consumption with the mining industry is a very interesting one, and I lob that at our analyst in our team. You know, anything that comes up that he produces, I'll tend to sort of push across him, and we discuss things. And I think look, you know, I think it's the big cap mining companies, the big cap gold mining companies are in a tough place. I mean, certainly if you look at the divergence between something like Franco-Nevada, which is a big royalty stream company, and the likes of Goldfields, Newmont, etc., you can see yourself what's happened. And I think that they're going to struggle, absent serious amounts of money coming into the sector, which of course I think you and I think is very likely, they're going to struggle to interest the the new money that comes into the sector, but you know, they may well have a chance. When you get big reallocations, the biggest companies will just take the strain because of liquidity concerns.
And I think it's interesting. Mr. Holland had a little time on his hands to write this report a couple of months ago, apparently. But I would imagine now, with all the striking going on, he might be a little preoccupied. We may not be getting a follow-up presentation anytime soon.
Indeed.
Now that you mentioned something in there, though, Ned, about being uncomfortable investing in African mining stocks. How does that? Can you kind of dovetail that into, I guess, Rocco's second question, which is about concern about nationalization? Do you take that into consideration? Are there areas that are more susceptible or that you'd be concerned about? Is that how, why you're worried about Africa?
Well, I'm laughing because we had this story about the Quebecois over the last 24 hours has sort of blown up, and my analyst told me this morning when I came in that he was expecting there to be some weakness in some of the Quebec-based Canadian mining companies, which did make me laugh, and we had a giggle about the idea of Canadian freedom fighting. But trying to avoid being too glib, what I would say is that I think, you know, unless you have a team of 30, which we don't have, you know, we're a team of three guys doing the investing and doing the analysis, I think, you know, you can only do so much. And my expertise is more in the Americas. I know a lot more. I did, you know, I have a bit of an educational background in Latin America, so I know a fair bit about that, and I'm comfortable more with the Americas than I am with Africa. I think there's great opportunity in Africa. I'm not saying that there's not money to be made there, and I'm sure there is, and indeed, as I say, my analyst often tries to sort of pitch Ghanaian and Senegalese, etc., companies as possibles to go in. But for me, it's more a case of knowledge-based herd. You know, I don't think you can probably know a lot about the geopolitics of Africa and Latin America and Central Asia and everything else, but for me, it's more a sense of trying to be comfortable. But I will also add that I got nobbled by Peru just over a year ago. So, you know, you even when you think you know what's coming, you often don't, particularly in the increasingly polarized and a stressed world in which we live, where these problems seem to emerge very quickly. I mean, I will also add they go away very quickly, but the problem is that and you can see this in the chart of various different companies if you bother to look it up, is what tends to happen is you get a massive overreaction in the share price, the downside, then the problem, inverted commas, gets resolved at a political level, and then you don't get the bounce back. And that is actually a reason to be nervous of mining companies. I think that's probably, in amongst the different things that people do worry about, I would say that is one to be concerned about. Yeah. I think it's valid. And I think it's probably another reason to consider royalty companies, because, you know, they don't get hurt by this. Or at least if you look at their share prices over the last 5 years, you know, none of the underlying issues have affected the share prices of those companies. So I think it's important. I hope that with rapidly rising metal prices, a lot of these issues will, I'm sure they'll still be there, but I think that they'll be less of a concern overall than they probably are at the moment.
Well, and you made some excellent points, and that's all well and good, Ned, but I think you and I both know that the reason you don't do African companies is if you go to do due diligence there, they don't have enough golf courses. So,
there aren't that many golf courses in Latin America.
Well, that's a good point. I guess that's accurate as well, I suppose, so I'll let you off the hook on that one. Rocco's last question, I guess, is just a simple one. At the current time, are you more bullish on gold miners or silver miners?
I would say silver miners, but I would say that there are donkeys in both, so it doesn't really work like that. You know, it's more a case of, bear in mind that, you know, I always try with clients and the fund I advise, with everyone, basically to try and have a 50-50 allocation between the two metals, and that be physical and mining shares. So I would sort of make that point initially, but I would say that I think there are great opportunities in both gold and silver mining companies. I think gold mining companies are covered far more by both analysts and by the public, so I think that there are less likely to be extreme valuation opportunities there as compared to silver. But in truth, you know, I think it's much more about the specifics of individuals, you know, try and look at it bottom up rather than taking that top down perspective and just say, look, you know, does this company make sense and why? You know, what's their cash position like? What's the news flow? Something I didn't mention before. I think it's always very important to have a grip on what news flow is like to come out over the next 6 to 9 months, depending on your time frame, of course. But I never buy a mining company for a 3 to 6 month view anyway. One's looking for more a 12 to 24 month return based on growth profile, news flow, and general expectations for the sector. So I wouldn't say, I would say silver over gold, mainly because you and I would both share the view that we think silver has further to go, so it's going to have a greater geared effect on the share price of those companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so Ned, to summarize, diversification is key. Mm-hmm. Doing your own homework is obviously important, to do as much as you can. Maybe you prefer more of a basket of small to mid-sized companies rather than the large, but you kind of wanted to be diverse across all size capitalization, yep. I would assume. And then keep an eye on the metals prices, obviously. And do you watch the HUI index much, for a kind of a technical signal? Or?
I do, and I think that it looks okay. It doesn't, you know, it's populated with a number of companies which I wouldn't by myself, so it's sort of skewed away a bit from what I look at, and I think probably that's more of a useful bellwether for people who aren't sort of, you know, deeply involved on a daily basis. And I think it, you know, clearly it's a very interesting and important index, certainly more so than the XAU. But look, I'll just reiterate something a little bit. You know, now I have the opportunity, which is that cash and cash burn point. I think that a lot of retail investors will fall down there. I know it seems like a really basic point, but you know, hammer away at these companies. Make sure that if you like a company, maybe it's because the asset base or the management or whatever it is that's driven you to investigate and look at a small company, make sure you're absolutely clear how much cash they've got, how quickly they're burning it, and what their plans are to you know, raise funds over the next 12 to 24 months should they need to do that. I think it sounds really simplistic, but I think it's an area where or wants to have a laser-like focus.
So you're saying that if a company is burning through cash and they end up having zero cash, it's likely that they're going to have a zero value for their stock as well?
No, that's not what I'm saying. That is not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that, you know, we all fear dilution. We all fear this constant cap-in-hand, boring, round-robin scenario. And, you know, sure, at some point, junior exploration development companies do raise money, and I'm not being silly here. It's just that you can often be dazzled by the potential of a project or of several projects or the management track record or whatever it might be that you get lured in by. But when push comes to shove, the thing that's going to, beyond the underlying movement in gold and silver, the thing that's really going to affect the share price is dilution and how quickly they're going to come back to the market for a refill. And some companies are a lot better at managing that than others. And I think it's something which one wants to be, you know, just make sure one you're aware of that before you start going in.
Excellent advice, my friend. I think we should probably stop there, but I would be remiss. I'm sure everyone would be frustrated with me if I did not seek from you any kind of update or guidance that you can provide toward our latest attempt in China to start a fully allocated international facing silver exchange. You know, we a lot of folks were excited about the page, and we all know what happened there. Mm-hmm. And do you have any guidance about some of the delays on the latest exchange?
Of course. I mean, I suppose it's quite good that we've discussed mining shares, and you made the point that this is my day job. I just want to make one point. You know, I think most people know this anyway, but just make the point that, you know, the exchange is the exchange. I do my job. It's just that I happen to know two of the guys who are involved with the exchange quite well, and they've, you know, sought consultancy from me, and we have a relationship. So there's only so much I can pass on, and my key point is that we're still going ahead. There's been no dodgy business going on that's happened with the Pan Asia Exchange, which is extremely good news. They are still dealing with the legal, you know, finalizing the legals of the exchange. It's still absolutely happening. I've been somewhat frustrated by my inability to come onto you and give you a really detailed download about it. But I will do that once I have sufficient information. There are things I could tell you now, but there's just no point, because what I want to do is to be able to, as I've stated before, come up with a proper update, here's the website, all the information's inside it. I mean, for what it's worth, they've built the website, they know what they're going to put in it, but the detail's not put in there. And what I want to do, and with Andy as well, is once it's all there, we'll go through it with them, make sure we're comfortable with what they're doing before we start, you know, formally endorsing it. But look, it's coming. My best guess would be it's not months, but you know, we're close by. I keep getting emails from them saying, look, you're going to get information imminently. But you know what? It's China. The main principal behind it are Chinese. I'm not, and I'm not formally involved with it. So there's only so much one can do without annoying them by, you know, pulling at their shirt tails on a daily basis.
Yeah.
An update's coming. It's still happening, and I look forward to, you know, doing a podcast with you to tell you lots more about it as and when I can.
Well, we'll appreciate that. And I think more than anything, after what happened to the page, I think a lot of folks will just be happy to hear that, you know, we're mainly just dealing with some bureaucratic and some systems issues, and that all things are go still.
And I can confirm that. That's absolutely right.
Well, Ned, thank you very much for stopping by Turdville. It is sure always fun to talk to you.
Not at all. And look, you know, I appreciate everything you're doing, and, you know, a big supporter, and we'll have an update at some point soon.
We look forward to it. And thank you, and keep doing what you're doing, and hopefully we'll have a nice, happy phone call again here sometime soon. And let's just see if we can't keep price going, charging higher.
Indeed.
All right, my friend. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks.